Well, to wrap up today's show, we're going to have another installment of The Left and the Law. And in this segment, Jan Hocken talks with Lauren Regan, Executive Director and Senior Staff Attorney with the Civil Liberties Defense Center in Eugene. Regan is lead criminal defense attorney in recent and several upcoming trials of climate activists. They'll talk about the history of fossil fuel industry lobbying in shaping anti-protest laws and charges against activists as eco-terrorists. Jan?
Welcome to KABU, Lauren Regan.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you bring decades of experience as a movement lawyer to our topic today, the legal terrain of the climate movement. And as founder and staff attorney at the Civil Liberties Defense Center, you have defended thousands of activists from around the country, as well as here in the Pacific Northwest. And we'll be talking later about a few of the upcoming trials of climate activists, including one this month in Portland, where you're lead defense attorney. But let's start with anti-protest laws and changes you have seen over time and confronted in the courts around criminalizing protests. Can you speak to some of the highlights and lowlights of that history?
Sure. I mean, I think the first thing that I would say is over 20 years of a career and developing a really strong network of mentors with even more years than that, one of the things that you learn is, you know, if you don't know your history, you're bound to repeat it. And the thing with repression, state repression, which in my mind, you know, includes things like laws that target dissent, target activism, grand juries, police brutality, or like overblown showing of force by law enforcement. All of those things are different forms of repression by the state, and that is nothing new. There are just a perpetual wave of different forms of repression, you know, painted with different colors, but the overall goal of that kind of repression is always the same, which generally speaking is to keep those in power, and to continue to, you know, either maintain or increase profits for some of them at the expense of activists that are fighting to change those dynamics and those structures. So, you know, every few years there is a new wave of anti-protest laws that target one particular movement or subset of the movement, and people tend to like freak out thinking, you know, the end is near and, you know, fascism is upon us. And then another wave, you know, that kind of ebbs and flows, and then another wave begins. So, you know, I think the one thing that activists need to remember is, you know, we're picking sides, and that's been going on for a long time. And you should expect that when you are targeting the profits of a multinational corporation, or you're targeting the government or law enforcement, you should expect a pitched battle in that. And when the state plays dirty, or when the state uses its power to try and pass laws to scare people away from being part of your movement, that shouldn't be surprising. We should be prepared for that. We should be able to undercut that or dismantle it in a way that leaves the state confused.
And that's been an issue in the water protectors and land protectors fight against Line 3 in Minnesota. You've been involved as lead defense attorney in the Valve Turners trial there and cases in four states. But many of the activists in Minnesota have talked about the militarizing of the police and anticipation of further resistance there to Line 3, bringing tar sands oil into that region, and the way in which Enbridge and other fossil fuel companies support or fortify the police response. Can you speak at all to that?
Sure. You know, I mean, I think that when fights like Line 3 take place, it only reinforces the importance of mass movements, because, you know, particularly in rural areas, when we look to Germany and how activists there battled the coal mines, you know, thousands of people swarmed into coal mines and basically sat down and shut down the mines. And I think that, you know, we can't underestimate that the state would like to divide and conquer, you know, any kind of dissent or any kind of activism against it. When you talk about the critical energy infrastructure laws, you know, like those that were used against the valve turners in Minnesota, you know, those are not really effective tools of the state, because especially in the case of the valve turners, they were going, you know, they were prepared to break the law. They were prepared to take the consequences of breaking the law, regardless of what that law was. So whether it was trespassing or burglary or critical energy infrastructure law, the name attached to that law was not going to determine whether or not those activists took the action that they did. And so when the fossil fuel industry, you know, in collusion with elected leaders that are bought and paid for by that industry, when they get together and do the industry's bidding and attempt to further criminalize activism by passing those kinds of laws, what they are really saying is, we're afraid of you, climate movement. You're being successful. We're on our heels. And so we're pulling out all of our, you know, last ditch efforts that we can purchase in order to try and basically defend our profits, you know, defend our right to exist. But it's not really an effective tactic. I think the other reason where when you see the industries, you know, whether it's pharmaceutical and, you know, massive ag passing the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act, or whether it's fossil fuel industry passing these critical energy infrastructure laws, the other thing that's going on there is they are using their money to try and frame the narrative for the public. You know, they are purchasing legislation because there are a lot of people who still believe that if the state passes a law and makes something a crime, it must be bad. And so, you know, by passing laws, the industry is hoping that at least some segment of the population is going to think, oh, climate activists wrong, targeting the fossil fuel industry and these pipelines that are actually, you know, destroying your water source and impacting your children's health and exacerbating climate change. You know, normally things that we, the people, would think are direct threats to us, by having the industry purchase a law that says that targeting that infrastructure is wrong, there are still people that will believe that. You know, I think more and more that is coming into question.
Can you talk? Yeah, and one site and stage for calling that into question on moral grounds, the fossil fuel industry and the infrastructure, are these trials where they attract a lot of interest. There's a lot at stake. Here, there will be ongoing coverage of the trial of activists who are facing criminal charges, trespassing that result from an April 2019 action intended to disrupt Zenith Energy Management's role in the global production movement and burning of fossil fuels from tar sands in Canada. Can you give us a preview of that upcoming trial? You'll be serving as lead defense attorney. What's at stake there, and what's important about this kind of trial?
Well, as one of the attorneys defending the activists involved in that, you know, my advocacy is somewhat limited because the trial is coming up in a couple of weeks. But I would say that the significance of it is that, similar to the valve turner cases that we've done around the country, we intend to be able to utilize the climate necessity defense with a Multnomah County jury. And in that case, you know, what is interesting is the city of Portland took certain steps to pass policy that was trying to be responsive to the imminent climate crisis that we face. And they basically passed, you know, put things on paper saying no more fossil fuel infrastructure. We know that actually we have to go the other way, you know, around, and we need to be reducing that, not creating infrastructure to increase it. But despite that, Zenith Energy began expanding its facility and building more of that infrastructure specifically for tar sands. Despite the city's statement to the contrary, and it was taken up to the Land Use Board of Appeals and to the Court of Appeals, where legal fights continue to be fought about whether or not local governments are allowed to take the health of their community into account and put down clear lines saying no more. You know, you've got the existing stuff that you've got, but no new infrastructure that will exacerbate climate change. And then, of course, you have the industry as a whole fighting against that and basically saying, how dare you tell us that we can't make billions of dollars of profits harming the health of your local community. We're going to like force this through regardless of what you say.
So one of the key elements of the necessity defense is the demand on defendants to explain how they have tried other alternatives, and that breaking the moral arguments for breaking the law or the lesser of two evils outweighs the harms alleged by their acts. Is that a higher bar in a state or area like Portland that has been seen as a model in passing anti-fossil fuel laws? Or law.
I mean, the choice of evils is a state statute, and you know, we've been attempting to use it for activists for, you know, the 20 years that I've been a lawyer. So that is nothing new. I think that currently the district attorney's position is that, you know, they are agreeing with us that a defendant has a Sixth Amendment right to put on a full defense. And they are not trying to block us like Washington and Minnesota, and, you know, many of the valve turner cases where the state, you know, initially attempted to exclude that kind of testimony. So, you know, that's based on state law. That's not specific to Portland. You know, this type of defense can be used anywhere in the state of Oregon. And you are right. You know, one of the tests that the defendants have to establish is that, you know, there was an imminent serious harm that they were seeking to mitigate or combat, and that they tried all reasonable legal alternatives before, you know, deciding to break the law. And so when you look at electoral politics, litigation, outreach and education, legislative and administrative rulemaking, you know, when you look at all those reasonable legal alternatives, what you recognize and what our experts will testify is that those traditional democratic systems of democracy are broken and corrupted right now, and they are not working.
Well, thank you so much, Lauren Regan, for being with us today and giving us that history as well as what we face going forward. And we will be continuing to follow the trial of Extinction Rebellion activists that were that will face charges, and as well as an excellent defense team here in the Multnomah County Courthouse on February 24th, as well as a case in Mount Vernon in Washington coming up in April as well. Thank you so much for being with us today, Lauren Regan, and I assume we can find out more about the Civil Liberties Defense Center on your website, including cases that you're following in the history of cases. Is that the best place to find to track you?
Yeah, cldc.org is our website, and we will definitely be putting up updates, including Ken Ward's new trial date once that is set by the court tomorrow. So, and thanks for having me, Jan.
Thanks so much. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.